Hey guys, welcome to the Chud Podcast here. It's a special LA installment. I've got Devin Faraci sitting here and no one else. I was going to name drop just somebody from the LA contingent, but that would have just been mean. So Devin, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Mr. Nick Nunziata. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, we are here at the hotel talking about various things.
We are in the heart of Hollywood here at
this
hotel.
Is this the heart?
No.
Because when the pamphlet said the scrotum.
Yeah, this is definitely sort of the taint area of Hollywood mostly.
No, I hate that word. Fucking hate that word. It's not as bad as grundle, but it's fucking
bad. Like taint because it taint the balls and taint the asshole.
Is that what it's supposed to
be? That's what it is, yeah. Taint the balls and taint the asshole.
Okay.
It's an Irish one.
Even worse. So we're going to talk a little bit about various shit, see how it works out. Don't want to spoil you guys. I can't afford to come out here too often, so Devin might have to get his own microphone.
Yes.
$99 at Best Buy for this kit.
Really?
Comes with the Audacity software.
And it looks like I'm in a old-timey radio station right now.
Yes. Well, it doesn't help that David Strathairn in black and white is on, it's on my bed waiting.
Wait, wearing nothing in black and white and nothing else.
And he's got all 8 men out. So, what? You flicked my computer off and it froze.
I don't know what just happened.
Incredible. So, Devin, let's start off with a little bit of Friday the 13th discussion to start off.
Okay.
First, preface this by saying which of your favorite ones are in the original canon.
My favorite Friday is Part 6, Jason Lives, and after that is Part 4, The Final Chapter. Without a doubt, those are my two favorite.
Actually, those are my two favorite, too, in the opposite order. I haven't watched 6 again lately, but from what I've been told, it's lost in terms of the humor not being as effective.
See, I disagree. It's funny. I thought 4 was my favorite forever and ever and ever, and then when I did my 10 Days of 13, I watched them all again, and I realized that the humor in 6 is actually really effective, and the storytelling in 6 is really effective. It isn't the least Friday out of all of them, because I think Part 9 is the least Friday out of all of them, but it doesn't have a lot of the general Friday stuff. It has its own very strange feel, and I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's probably the most fun installment. I think it's my favorite zombie Jason one, and it has some really awesome kills. Horseshack gets his heart punched out, a cop gets bent in half, and there are actual children in the movie who are being menaced by Jason, which we've seen in no other Friday movie.
Do you know where that was shot?
Where?
Georgia.
Was it?
Yep.
Just like Halloween 2.
Chud's best friend, Carl Cunningham, actually was peripherally somewhat not really involved at all in this.
This was his follow-up to Invasion USA?
It really was. I remember he had a friend who was one of the kids underneath. There's kids underneath one of the cabins. Yeah. One of those is a kid named, I think, Tommy Newell or something like that. And he's a friend of Carl's.
Wow. Those kids are great.
Yeah.
They have some funny lines.
Whatever happened to Tom Matthews? That guy was actually, he was in two seminal genre films and then disappeared.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to him. I mean, he's like on like some of the special features on the original box set, and he seems like a pretty nice guy. I just think that he was like so 80s. It's the same thing I was telling you earlier tonight. I became MySpace friends with Jewel Shepherd, who was in Zapped and who was in with Tom Matthews in Return of the Living Dead. And, you know, I mean, her career just never really went anywhere either, and she's, you know, a wonderful woman and still looks pretty good too. It's just there's people from those B movies of the 80s. I feel like if he didn't break through pretty big in a big way immediately, he just kind of faded away.
Like the blonde girl in Night of the Comet.
Yes, whose name we probably can't even remember.
I know Catherine Mary Stewart, right? Mm-hmm. Or was the other one? You know what? She's the Jewel. What's the name? Jewel.
Jewel Shepherd.
Jewel Shepherd is actually 20 times cooler than Jewel State.
At least a million times cooler than Jewel State. Jewel Shepherd apparently did some kind of documentary where she went around the country in a bikini trying to find out if people knew who she was. Can you imagine Jewel State doing that?
Not recently, though, right?
No, like a couple of years ago.
Oh, God.
She looks terrific still. And you can go to her website, jewelshepherd.com, and buy posters of her naked touching her vagina. Like, full posters. And I guess she'll sign it for you, even.
With, like, a slug trail? Okay, so we've decided that 4... I like 3 a good bit, too.
I like 3. 3 has some really good kills. 3 is a lot of fun. And I mean, there's other ones I like too. I mean, I'm one of the people who likes Jason X a lot. I think Jason X is terrific. X, yeah. And I've even grown to like 9, the one where Jason's body hopping, because it has that totally wacky performance by what's his name from 21 Jump Street? Shit, I'm drawing a blank.
There's Richard Grieco and Johnny Depp. That's all I know.
The original lieutenant, the played Mr. X on the X-Files, black dude.
Stephen Williams.
Stephen Williams as a bounty hunter chasing Jason Voorhees.
Is that 21 Jump Street?
Yeah, he was the original sort of CO. And
was
he's
he, was he black on that show?
No, he was Asian.
Okay.
He was Stephen Williams, but he has a terrific performance in that as a totally bonkers bounty hunter. I'm easy for them. I like all these movies, even the ones I don't like. I like.
You know what's funny is like Empire Magazine did a thing recently, and one of their favorites was Jason Takes Manhattan, which is probably my least favorite.
It's the worst one by far out of all of them. It's sort of grown on me in how bad it is, and just how hugely bad it is. Because Jason's only in Manhattan for like 15 minutes at the end. It has this amazing scene.
So it's the Lost World of Friday the 13th movies.
It's Jason Takes a Cruise. Yeah, I mean, like, and it has this amazing scene at the end where the two kids who are being chased by Jason through Manhattan come into a bar, and they're being chased by this zombie from Crystal Lake who took a cruise from a lake to New York. I don't know how that even works. But anyway, they're being chased, and they come into this bar, and they go, "Help us, we're being chased by a maniac with a machete." And somebody in the bar goes, "Welcome to New York." And it's so fucking terrible that it's like, it's kind of notably terrible. Yeah. So, and it includes Kelly Yu.
Oh, really?
Yeah, early. she gets killed on a dance floor on the cruise ship, yeah.
But I don't remember it being gory. I don't remember much nudity.
It got murdered by the MPAA. 7 and 8 really took a 7 really took a big hit from the MPAA. They cut everything good out of 7. And 7's not a good movie anyway. It has that 7's the one with the psychic girl.
Yeah, the John Carl Buechler one.
Oh, it's so terrible. But at least it had really good gore, and that all got cut out. And 8, all the gore also got cut out.
And it had an ambitious approach to Jason. I mean, like, Jason, he spent a lot of time trying to make Jason look different and try to give him, like...
In 7?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, 7 Jason probably has, like... For a lot of fans, it's Jason's best look. I mean, he has every single hit that Jason's taken over the previous 6 pictures is reflected in his zombie makeup. But part 8 does include the lead girl, the main girl, who's also a little bit psychic in 8, does, early in the picture, get a pen that Stephen King used in grade school. That is one of the plot points of part 8. So she's
totally
given a graduation present. Here's a pen that Stephen King used in grade school. I don't know
how
you
verify
that.
Can I change my rating? It's the best Friday the 13th. Unfortunately, it's a different Stephen King.
But here's a highlighter that Mick Garris used to adapt a Stephen King novel.
Speaking of anecdotal, we went to a bar in hopes of having a sighting of Mick Garris.
We were looking. We were Mick Garris hunting tonight. It's true.
We were. I mean, I know that. But the thing was, we had to get in line. We didn't really do that well. We did get to see William Lustig from a distance.
Which is about as far as you want to see William Lustig from.
Yeah. I remember when Jason Takes Manhattan came out, I was working as a projectionist at the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
And when all the promotional stuff came in, I hoarded it.
Right.
I was like, this is legendary. I had the poster in my room. I had the banner. I had the 35mm trailer. I was like, folks, this is can't miss.
The trailer's awesome.
Yeah.
It's all people in Manhattan reacting like they're being killed by Jason, and in the movie, they're not in Manhattan hardly at all.
The I Love New York sign. Which
do you have that?
Yeah.
Because
I don't know if I still do.
I have that. It's really rare because they never got permission from the New York Tourist Bureau to use the logo, so it got banned. So anybody who has the I Love New York with Jason cutting through, which is I have hanging in my room, it is a serious collector's item.
Speaking of serious collector's item, I also have the King Kong on the Twin Towers poster. Which I don't know if you know this, but that's not current.
No, that is indeed an older edition. You know what I do have? One of the first things I ever got from Chud, I got at a Dragon Con in 2001, a Spider-Man poster for the original Spider-Man with the World Trade Center reflected. I still have that.
Still have that on my wall. It's actually a great poster, and I thought the logic behind keeping it for sentimental value actually made sense, but... Hotter heads
they asked to send them all back, right? They specifically contacted.
We actually, I sent a modicum of them back just to appease them,
right.
And I kept some just because, first of all, I thought there was no way on earth anybody could find it disrespectful. I found it actually more kind of emotionally like fulfilling,
right?
And also, it was a gorgeous poster. It was a great poster. I mean, you know, that Spider-Man and New York have always kind of gone hand in hand,
right?
And if anything, they should have recalled them and done another poster of the same idea, maybe changed what was reflected. I don't think they ever managed to make a poster that was that powerful.
No, I definitely agree. None of the other posters were that good. And I think that because they recalled them, everybody died in vain on 9/11 as a result. So I think that I think Spider-Man was disserviced. And I think that there are 3,000 angry ghosts right now heading to the West Side for something.
I wonder if anybody's pitched that. Okay, I got to pitch it. It's a ghost story set at Ground Zero.
And it's about the Spider-Man poster. The souls of everyone who died on 9/11 are in the Spider-Man poster.
And the only people who are going to be haunted are people that refuse to send it back to Sony. Now we know why Sony's blacklisted us.
Yes, there we go. No, Sony's really good with us, actually.
Oh, wait, is it Fox?
Fox has blacklisted us.
Because they're responsible for 9/11.
They're responsible for the plague, 9/11, AIDS, and everything else since. So,
they're also responsible for the Joe Blow show.
Ooh, the Joe Blow TV show. I've never watched it. Have you watched it?
I have. It's not bad.
Well, good. Good for Birch.
It pisses me off. Those guys do good work. Fuck them. Damn it for being much more energetic and collected. All right, so you saw the new one. The new Friday
I did 3rd. See the new one.
And your review is available on the internet.
My review is available on the secret internet. The secret Chud boards only. I'm embargoed from review, but I guess what I will say, the caveat is that I'm kind of an easy mark for Friday the 13th. If it has Jason killing people, I'm happy. But I think it's a pretty good movie.
This is Jason Robards.
This is Jason. It's on Golden Machete. And I don't think that this is the best Friday. I think it might be my third or fourth favorite Friday, which is pretty good because there have been 11 other ones.
Including the three with Chris Tucker.
Yes. This one actually does include Chris Tucker. There's actually enough pot smoking in this movie to have possibly included Chris Tucker.
And tits.
There are some really excellent tits. There's a tremendous set of tits at the end of this movie.
Are they real tits or fake tits?
There are three nude scenes. Two of them are fake. One is gloriously real.
Cool.
I liked it. I like what they did. I mean, this is what I'm going to write in my review so you guys get a sneak preview. Is, you know, when your favorite band kind of makes a couple of really experimental albums and kind of like goes crazy, and then they come back with the rootsy record that's like, this is what we were playing in the clubs. That's what this movie is. This is sort of getting back to the roots of what a Friday the 13th is. There's no body hopping. There's no Manhattan. There's no space. There's no psychics. It's just Jason in the woods running around with a bag on his head killing people. And I think I really like that. I like the back-to-basics approach. And I think that Platinum Dunes have really set themselves up to kind of take this franchise back and to do interesting things with it. I think that they've set it up. The kills are okay. They're not great. I think they're not in any danger of trying to figure out how to top themselves. They can top the kills in this movie. But I think it's a really good reboot.
Is it good enough to get Marcus Nispel that job on End of Days?
I think Marcus Nispel is Marcus Nispel will be doing CSI pretty soon.
Incredible.
That's for other reasons.
Actually, you know what's weird? There are a couple of decent kills in Freddy vs. Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Which surprised me. But I don't remember any kills from like the last three or four of Friday the 13th. And we got so willing to just deal that the whole creative kills and fun kills and all that became secondary.
Well, they kind of got really, they got more outlandish they went along. I mean, in part 8, Jason, there's a scene on a rooftop where he's up against a guy who's a boxer, and the boxer throws a couple of punches at Jason, and then Jason just gives him a right hook and knocks his head off. I mean, that's pretty good.
Which one?
That's part 8. That's Takes Manhattan. Okay. In Jason X, probably the best kill in Jason X is one of the earliest kills.
Yeah.
Is when he puts that girl's head in the nitrogen, and then he smashes her face off.
That's a great
scene. That's a tremendously
that
great
scene,
kill.
And it made the movie Insider and Chud's top 50.
Well, rightfully so. So I think there were a couple of good ones. I mean, and then like you said, in Jason vs. Freddy, there's a couple of good kills. There's a really cool kill in Jason vs. Freddy. Well, not even a kill. It's a cool scene where Jason comes on a rave and then gets doused on fire. Freddy vs. Jason. And just sets everybody
it's a cornfield rave.
It's a cornfield rave, yes. And that's pretty cool.
It's a Stuart Cornfield rave.
You know what the bummer about Jason Takes Manhattan is that what the rave scene I liked about that is that he goes to this rave and he just kills everybody at the rave. In Jason Takes Manhattan, there's a scene where he's chasing the kids through a subway, and he's just ignoring everybody in the subway except for the two kids. And I feel like real Jason would be just hacking and slashing his way through the subway.
Like Midnight Meat Train, the scene. Do you remember that?
I didn't see it.
There's a scene where the collateral damage is the best part. There's a guy who's already hung up and ready to die, and he gets there's a fight on the meat train, and he gets hit a bunch of times during that. God damn it! It's best shit ever.
I need to see it. Even if it isn't that good, I need to see
it. Is it on DVD? It's not on DVD.
I don't know. I think it might have just come out on DVD recently, I think.
I don't think so.
I think Lionsgate is not done shitting on that movie. I think they shit on that movie pretty hard, and I think they're potentially still shitting on that movie in the future.
I think Clive Barker pureed every print and injected it into his bloodstream.
Barker liked it.
Really?
Yeah, Barker liked it. He was a big proponent of it, and then Lionsgate really fucked it, and they wouldn't release it. You know what happened is, you probably remember this, Lionsgate, the whole thing was they were contractually obligated to release it, and so what they did is they released it in dollar theaters.
Yep. I was one of those dollars.
What? I mean, what a fuck you to a movie.
It was $1.99 for me.
Well, there you go. So you threw an extra
$1.99. If I had worked for Joe Blow, it would have only been a dollar.
Well, no, it would have been even less because they're in Canada.
Ah, shit.
There you go.
Okay, so you've talked about some of your favorite kills in the Friday the 13th films. I want to go over a couple more. I think the ones that really stick out to me, obviously the Kevin Bacon one, the sleeping bag one in Jason X. The when he put the paper in the blank's pistol on the set of the Jason Lee the Brandon Lee movie.
I was say the John Eric Hexum TV show. That's Brandon Lee's too obvious. John Eric Hexum is the choice.
John Eric Hexum has his own Chud shirt.
I know. I saw.
And you know what? He would have no value if he didn't spell his Eric with a K.
That was a good show, though.
Cover Up?
No. Voyagers?
Oh, because Cover Up was what he got killed by.
I know, but Voyagers was the show he was on before that. It was actually pretty good. Like, if somebody out there is, I mean, well, Nick Nunziata, producer extraordinaire who's here in LA pitching projects, do a movie version of Voyagers. Time travel's hot. 80s TV shows are hot. John Eric Hexum remains hot.
Actually, some would say that maybe all of this has been indeed his greatest voyage. Who was the other person? Because
it was a kid. I can't remember.
Wasn't like Quantum Leap kind of like a little bit like Voyagers?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, because Voyagers was like the kid had the magic compass, and then they traveled through all different points of history. Quantum Leap just kept it to all the stuff they could shoot on backlots. See, that was it. Was the much more budget version.
See, the thing, the problem is, if I was in charge of a decently budgeted version of Voyagers, they would just keep going back to the slave period in America's history and high-five the plantation owners.
You call it Last Friday.
Okay, so Jared Padalecki is in the new Friday.
He is, yeah. Yeah.
That guy has, like, he was in House of Wax.
Yeah.
He was in...
Which I like, too.
I did, too.
And here's the thing. I feel like a lot of our listeners right now be like, you like House of Wax, but, like, they put a pole right through Paris Hilton's head. That was pretty terrific.
Actually, you know what? House of Wax has actually got some pretty interesting imagery, too.
Yeah, it's a really well-made movie. Yeah, I think so.
Who directed it? Do you remember?
I have no idea.
Some guy.
The Dark Castle, who knows?
I think it was some guy. It's probably Stephen Herrick.
Somebody who Joel Silver ate later on.
Yeah, no, I mean, the effects are good, and actually, I love the guy that plays the bad guy, the ultimate that guy that the good looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Basic.
Mm-hmm.
Offhand, of course, I forget his name. I'm sure he appreciates that. I know there's initials in his name. I believe there's initials in his name.
We can go down to the front desk and ask him.
No, he's. But House of Wax is actually a pretty good movie.
No, I like that movie.
What? Okay. Sorry to segue, but okay, let's talk about the Dark Castle. We had House on Haunted Hill, 13 Ghosts, yeah. Ghost Ship.
Right. We had, what was the other one that they...
They did one that was kind of like, not. Oh, Gothica?
Gothica. You know, the thing is, most of these movies suck. I don't like the Dark Castle pictures, except for House of Wax. I don't like
that. I like House on Haunted Hill decently, and there are moments of Ghost Ship I like.
There are moments of Ghost Ship I like, and House on Haunted Hill I could probably watch on HBO... You know what I mean? If I had to, and maybe in 10 years I'll be far enough away from it to kind of accept it. But
which one?
House on Haunted Hill.
Oh.
13 Ghosts is so bad. It's 13, so rotten.
That house is incredible, though.
I mean, the production design's awesome.
Incredible, yeah.
But like, then just go make a ride at Disneyland with that. You know what I mean? That's the thing. I mean, like, if you can make a movie, make a movie. It's fascinating. I mean, I get like a lot of shit on the boards because I like Platinum Dunes guys a lot, and I think that they've done what Joel Silver and Dark Castle couldn't do. I think they've taken these old concepts.
Did they do Hills of Eyes?
They did not do Hills of Eyes. They did Texas Chainsaw, Amityville Horror, Hitcher, and
Friday 13th,
and one other.
Okay, because Hitcher sucked.
They hate it, by the way.
And Amityville Horror sucked.
I didn't see it.
It's not good.
What was the other one?
Chainsaw's good.
I like Chainsaw. I don't like the prequel, but
they
like Chainsaw.
They did Emily Rose, didn't they?
I don't know. I don't think so. They did The Unborn, which if Chud did a top 10 camel toes in film, would be 1 through 9.
I was expecting more from the camel toe in that movie.
I thought the camel toe was astonishing.
It's one
in that
moment.
Movie.
It's not like the whole film.
No, but it is quite the moment, though. I feel like it's like that Basic Instinct moment.
But right? I didn't realize. See, you didn't warn me that it was Gary Oldman's camel toe.
No, well, that's the thing. It was, and his camel toe had the face of Idris Elba. It turns out that was the most disturbing part.
Stringer balls. But The Unborn, man, I swear to God, it seemed like a big-budget fan film to me. He's watched all these great movies.
Right.
And that's, to me, that's one of the problems I have with David Goyer is, like, his ideas. He's got some great ideas and some great moments, but he can't really deliver, like, the whole punch. But,
I think The Unborn is, like, it's like two movies fighting to, you know, fighting each other. I mean, like, I think if The Unborn had been written a year later, he would have dropped all that bullshit kid stuff because he would have realized that the Japanese trend was over. All that stuff with the kid was all because he had seen The Ring and The Grudge and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That was the problem with that.
Yeah, the funny thing about The Unborn is I saw it with Steve Murphy. We did an Unborn mini podcast. The thing that pissed him off most was that he had clothes. It's like, wait, if he died in the womb, why does he have clothes?
But he didn't because he was the kid from the Holocaust.
He wasn't the kid from the Holocaust.
He was the kid from the Holocaust.
See, I didn't get that.
It was the kid from the Holocaust trying to be reborn as her twin and then getting killed in the womb and then coming back again. It's overly complicated. It's like Goyer had 5 different movie ideas and he threw them all together. And, like, I think he overdid it. I mean, that's the problem. I think that he just threw too much shit in there and didn't focus enough. Because I feel like the stuff with, like, Gary Oldman and Idris Elba, there's an interesting movie about, like, Gary Oldman as a Jew, first of all. But just in general, I think there's good stuff to go there, but he keeps getting lost in, like, the scary kid and the scary dumb stuff and the teenage babysitting and stuff like that. You know, it's a movie that needed, somebody to come in and just really, like, reshape it a lot.
The boyfriend character was an absolute nightmare.
He was gay, too. That was the part that drove me nuts, is you're watching the whole movie and the boyfriend is obviously the gayest dude in anything this side of the birdcage.
And the token black girlfriend was just so overblown. But you know what?
He did have a kid getting hit by a car, though. That was pretty good.
I'm so tired of people getting hit by cars.
I know. It's the glory days of Meet Joe Black are far behind us.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the pinnacle. I like how I think you should go into a studio meeting and your pitch is Gary Oldman's a Jew.
So Gary Oldman's a Jew,
and then
that's it.
They're like, how many digits do you want at the end of this paycheck? Because we're 6, 7. I mean, we're in.
He's waiting for the prophet Elijah. That's what it is. That's Gary Oldman waiting for Elijah.
It's like Immortal Beloved meets Vamp. I don't know. Okay, so
like Immortal Beloved meets Portnoy's Complaint is what it is. Masturbating Jews, but
wait, you mean James Purefoy's Complaint about not being for Vendetta? So, like, what is your ultimate number grade going to be for Friday 13th?
It's probably going to be, like, in the 8 range. I think is what I'm going to end up with. I'm currently struggling with the entire numerical system.
You mean in general?
Well, in general, I don't like the numbers. And secondarily, I come from...
You're going to piss David Krumholtz off.
I know. I hate that show. But, you know, I have a cousin that works on that show doing pyrotechnics. But, which... How much do they even have that? But,
whenever he thinks, like, sparks fly.
The thing that drives me nuts about the numbers is that I based it all on my high school experience, and I went to a high school, not to toot my own horn, where a 70 or a 7 out of 10 was a failing grade. So this has colored my entire
numerical. I went to one where 69 was a failing grade.
I went to one where 69 was what all the priests did with you. But no, I guess 69 was a failing grade where I went. But I know a lot of people went to schools where it was like 65 or 60. So my whole thing is anything below a 7 out of 10 to me feels like a failing grade. And I don't think that's what it's supposed to be. And so I have a very hard time with the numerical system. So I feel like if I say 5 out of 10, I feel like that's like pretty fucking terrible. And then below that, how
does that differ from stars if you give something 2.5 stars?
Well, 2.5 stars, I don't know why, but it's like a mental block thing. 2.5 stars or like 2.5 chud men or whatever it would be would not feel as much of a failing grade as a 5 out of 10 for whatever reason. 5 out of 10 feels to me like I'm going to hide this report card from my mom. 2.5 out of 5 feels like, well, I guess I could do better next time.
Spoiler, the new chud redesign, when Devin on the back end enters a 7.5, you will be treated with the sight of 7.5 creature starfish icons.
There we go.
Everybody goes home happy, except the people that died in 9/11.
And they don't go home at all.
All right, so Devin, what about this remake of the Last House on the Left?
I'm seeing it next week.
Are you excited?
Yeah, I am, because I'm going to be seeing it, and then I'm going to go out afterwards to the reception with Garrett Dillahunt.
Are you going to the Tony Goldwyn Theater to watch it?
I'm going to the ArcLight, actually, which is a great theater. I'm very excited. I don't know. You know, it's a dumb movie to remake, but and the time to have remade it was like 3 years ago.
Yeah, no, that's
so.
To me, it's like The Hills Have Eyes kind of accomplished. What are they going to do with that premise? They're going to have to make it more toothless than the original.
It's going to be more toothless. It's going to be more Eli Rothed up. And it's going to feel like a movie that it's just going to feel too late. It's just going to feel like a movie that's not on time. I mean, you know, and I think people aren't. I think what's going to happen, the thing about Friday the 13th is that people think people are ready for fun horror movies where the kills are fast and funny and you can yell. And I think that the days of torture, I mean, I still like that because I'm sick, but I think the days of that for the audiences are a little bit behind us right now.
But it has legitimate actors in it.
That's the craziest part about it. I mean, Garrett Dillahunt, who's like a really fucking
good actor. And
Tony Goldwyn.
Star of Cuffs.
There was somebody else who's going to be at the party afterwards. I forget who. That's also modestly legitimate. But, yeah,
Who's the girl? Is it Monica Potter as the wife?
It might be. That might be who's going to be at the party. I don't have a lot of expectations for it. If it's okay, I'm not going to judge it against the original. You know, it's a waste of time.
She's been sold as the Garrett Dillahunt of rom-com actresses.
Has she? I've been sold as the Garrett Dillahunt of news repurposers. So I'm very excited to be on the same page.
Garrett Hedlund of news repurposers, which would make Russ the
Ted Knight. He's the Ted Knight. I don't know.
I was trying to remember the name of the guy who played the who was the guy in Rules of Attraction who shot that whole sequence. He was in like Friday Night Lights or whatever, or like Varsity Blues. The guy went to Europe and they had all that.
Yeah,
that's who Russ is.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'm so bad with names.
Pretty guy.
I have to look everything up. It wasn't Dawson, right?
No, Dawson's great though. That movie's fucking weird to watch now.
Oh, you know what's funny is that the new Bret Easton Ellis movie, The Informers, was at Sundance, and it's like one of the worst movies ever made in the history of mankind. And it's so bad that Amber Heard is in it, and in almost every scene she's in, she's naked, and it's still one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
Amber Heard, I don't know who she is. Is she related to John Heard?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes me hard.
I don't think she. I don't know. That's a good question for the internet. But she's an attractive young lady who's in a number of movies. She was Mandy Lane in All the Boys Love Mandy Lane.
Which
and,
is still unreleased.
It's coming straight to DVD from Sony Pictures Classics a little bit later on this year. But she's really hot, and she's naked in almost every scene she's in, and still, I mean, it's among the worst things I've ever seen projected on a screen.
Who else is in it?
Mickey Rourke, Billy Bob Thornton, a couple of people off the top of my head, I can't remember.
Okay, I've never heard of either of those.
it's almost enough to make you wish Mickey Rourke loses the Oscar. What's his name's last film?
Mickey Rourke.
Jared
Harris?
No, I'm losing my... Who just fucking OD'd on heroin 2 years ago? Can we edit this part?
Heath Ledger?
No, he last year, a year ago. The year before that, it was, what's his name? Fuck.
Not Brad Renfro.
Brad Renfro, yes. It's his last role. Brad Renfro's last role. And he's awful.
His last role was in the Continental Breakfast at the hotel.
His last role was into the body bag. But this was his previous to that role. And he's so fucking bad that you now know why he's dead. I mean, it is, the movie is so, it's so rotten. It's so fucking rotten. I only sat through it because I knew if I walked out of it, I couldn't ethically review it. Yeah. And I needed to say bad things about this movie. And afterwards, the publicist came up to me and was like, what did you think? I'm like, I hated it. And she says, isn't that very personal? I'm like, well, it personally irritated me. 45 minutes in, I knew I wanted to leave, and I had to stay for a full hour and a half just so I could tell my readers this is the worst thing that's happened since the people from 9/11 died for no good reason because they took back those Spider-Man posters.
God damn.
This is the worst tragedy since that.
And I think the worst is yet to come. Now, Amber Heard, I can't picture in my mind, but she's naked throughout.
She's naked throughout, yeah. She's naked throughout, and then she gets AIDS. She gets fast-acting AIDS, and she dies over the course of a weekend from AIDS. It's so fucking stupid. It's so fucking stupid.
She get fast-acting AIDS?
It's fast-acting AIDS. She's okay on Friday, and Sunday she's dead from it. And it's like...
Fast AIDS is a Halo name.
it's so and however she's laying on the beach dying of AIDS, fast AIDS, and she's covered like in like painted on Kaposi sarcoma, and she's still totally fuckable and is still naked. I hate this movie so much. I really do. I really hate this movie.
Who directed it?
Some European douchebag.
Okay.
Greg or something or other.
So he's basically going to be played by Stellan Skarsgård.
and Peter Sarsgaard. And teaming up for a CGI performance.
All right. Well, tell us some other shit. Hey, what have you seen lately? What have you seen good lately?
I did not see He's Just Not That Into You tonight because it was 130 minutes. This is 130 minutes.
Which is the punchline is to why didn't you fuck Amber Heard on the beach?
This is 130 minutes. I skipped that. I'm seeing Push tomorrow, which I'm excited about.
Chris Evans is great.
I love Chris Evans, and I feel like Push looks like a you know what it looks like? It looks like a Valiant comic.
Oh shit! Warriors of Plasm?
Or no, that was the other one that he did.
No, that was
this.
That
it looks like Harbinger. It looks like sort of like a real world.
They were Exo Man of War. Right. And other, okay. Ninjak.
Right. It was like and Bloodshot. It looks like that. It looks like superheroes in a real world. And so I'm kind of excited. I think it's sort of low budget and modestly cheesy, but I love Chris Evans, and you know, so I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Is Dakota Fanning in that?
She is in that.
Is she reprising her Hound Dog character?
She gets raped by Chris Evans, yeah. She apparently doesn't get raped in Hound Dog. Nobody's seen it. I mean, like, it played a couple festivals, and then, like, I guess it's now on DVD, but apparently she doesn't actually get raped in the picture. It's like she gets raped off-screen or something like that, which is why do you even want to see it, then? If you can't see Dakota Fanning get raped, what is even the point?
Really? I mean, that's why I gave up on every other film she's done.
That's why I've given up on movies. I'm done. If I can't see Dakota Fanning getting raped, I don't even care. Call me back when she's starring in the remake of
Spare No Expense. I've had to get by watching Elle Fanning get raped. But it's not the same. It's like watching Beau Bridges jerk off.
It's funny, I've interviewed both of them, and Elle Fanning appears to be a human being, and Dakota Fanning appears to be some kind of robotic being. It's so creepy to interview Dakota Fanning. She's just so creepy. And Elle is at least like a regular girl. It's very strange.
She's the one that lived.
Yes. Oh, I interviewed Joaquin Phoenix today, and then Casey Affleck then interviewed me. That was the other thing that's happened to me lately. And Joaquin Phoenix.
Did you have a chance to talk to Casey as like just a regular person?
No, unfortunately, Casey was sort of like he'd never turn the camera off. The camera was on the whole time because Casey is directing this documentary about Joaquin as Joaquin retires from acting and begins a hip hop career. And I suspected that the whole thing was sort of a Andy Kaufman-esque thing. One of my Twitter friends, and I don't know who it is, and whoever, if you're listening, thank you, said I should call Joaquin Tony Clifton the whole time. And it really is like that. It's like when Andy Kaufman did Tony Clifton, he just stayed in character. And it was obviously a character. It was strange. I don't think it's like a Borat thing where it's like a comedy. It's this weird art project. It was pretty strange.
I think you should have done two things to make it more successful. And to guarantee you'd be in the finished cut, you should have kept asking the director, Casey, if he was ever going to hang out with the Sunshine Band again. And also ask Joaquin if he's hung out with other hip-hop artists, like Paul McCartney's ex-wife.
I asked him if he was going to remix that 911 call he made the night that River died. But the hip-hop remix of my brother is choking on his own vomit.
If you don't help him, I'm going to change my name from Leaf.
it was Joaquin originally. He changed it to Leaf.
Really?
Yeah, he changed it to Leaf and then changed it back to Joaquin. I just found that out this morning doing research for this interview. All of which is pointless because the whole interview was a fucking joke. But
it was probably some sort of an outcry against stem cell research.
It was. He original name was actually Roe. Middle name V Wade, Phoenix. So
now tell us, did Joaquin have a beard and a mustache?
Joaquin had a big beard and he had a long hair. And actually, what's funny is that somebody at the table, it was a round table, it was like eight of us, and somebody said to Joaquin, "Why have you changed your appearance so drastically?" And Joaquin said, "I feel like I'm changing my life in the extreme. I should change my appearance in the extreme." And then he turns to me and goes, "What's your excuse?" So, and I said, "I have no chin."
And Devin said, "To hide the hair lip."
I said, "Because River died." And it's funny because Casey and Joaquin have been friends since they were 17, and it really feels like there's some kind of like baby brother of famous people club they belong to. You know what I mean? Even though I love Casey, I think Casey's really amazingly talented. He has operated for the last decade and change under the shadow of Ben Affleck.
And now Casey can get in his own stretch Hummer and go to his mansion as well, though.
I don't know how well he's doing. Joaquin denied being rich today. I said, as a hip-hop artist, what does a rich white actor have to bring to keeping it real? And he goes, "I'm not that rich." So I think Joaquin's probably pretty fucking rich, though, by all standards.
He did Buffalo Soldiers.
He did, and that obviously at least made him rich in spirit.
Actually, Buffalo Soldiers was a good movie.
It's good. Nobody saw it, though.
It's no Ladder 49, though.
Did that even come out?
Yeah. That was like, I got the exclusive opportunity, along with many other people, to interview folks like him and Travolta and whoever else was involved.
Oh, John Travolta.
He's had a rough year.
I can't wait to do the press for taking a Pelham 123. Boy, that's gonna be a blast.
You're a fan of the original, right?
I love the original. Yeah, I know somebody who's seen the remake,
and I've heard it's good.
I don't believe it, but I've heard it.
Who directed that?
Tony Scott.
Holy fuck!
Exactly, and it's got Denzel Washington playing Walter Matthau. which means that Will Smith will now be playing Jack Lemmon in the Odd Couple remake. Or Tony Randall, sorry.
I see. I'm picturing him playing Walter Matthau in JFK right now.
You know what's funny is that when Patton Oswalt did a film series of The New Beverly, he played a bunch of Walter Matthau films, and there was this period in the 70s, I think people don't realize, where Walter Matthau was making movies where he was the romantic action leading man. He showed this amazing film called Charlie Varick, where Walter Matthau's a bank robber who fucks the two hottest girls in the movie and then gets into a gunfight. And it's just like, and he's Walter Matthau. I mean, this isn't like young Walter Matthau. This is just Walter Matthau. And it's kind of amazing. I mean, people thought like, you know, oh, Seth Rogen is the leading man. That's crazy. Walter Matthau was like, there's a scene in Charlie Varick where this girl has a round bed and Walter Matthau says that he wants to fuck her in every compass position on the round bed. And
He
proceeds to do it. He proceeds to wear her out doing it. It's amazing. It really is just incredible. So for everybody out there, if I don't know if Charlie Varick's available on DVD, it is a terrific fucking movie, and it's a very underrated film from the 70s. I highly recommend it.
Are they going to remake it with Stallone?
They're going to remake it with Tyler Perry. Wouldn't that be amazing? Tyler Perry's Friday the 13th, Madea goes to Camp Crystal Lake. Come on, who would not pay to go see that?
He should remake Demons and call it Medemon.
Isn't it troubling that every movie he adds different women?
And he bursts out of somebody's black. Tyler Perry is from Atlanta.
Yes, he's a local boy.
I wish Sherman did a better job.
Nat Sherman?
Bug Hall.
No, he's pretty awful. I haven't seen a Tyler Perry movie since Diary of a Mad Black Woman. I learned my lesson quickly.
I cannot believe that guy can buy everybody that's ever been a descendant of me, or I'm a descendant of him. Yeah. He could buy everything.
Well, you're Italian. That's very cheap. That goes very cheap. That's I know, but I'm not saying much.
You're talking about the most mixed race ever. I can say whatever I want about him because what does he have to worry about? He's flying a hovercraft like around the fucking Washington Monument right now.
It's shocking. I mean, it is. It's fascinating because, I mean, the thing about Tyler Perry is, like, I don't get up in arms about Tyler Perry because it isn't like Tyler Perry movies are, like, taking away from better films or whatever. He's sort of serving this audience that doesn't get served by anything else. And, like, you know, I guess good for him. Like, he figured out his little niche and he's, like, exploited it. I mean, like,
yeah, but
God bless, you know.
But the thing is, he puts out at least a movie a year.
At least, yeah.
At least. And there's the quality control be damned.
Yeah.
And people still go. And I think... At what point does he bite the hand that feeds him? It's never is it ever going to happen?
The point when Madea goes into space becomes a cyborg. I think that's actually Tyler Perry X.
Actually, I would love to see a movie where all the franchises who went into space collide. So you got Leprechaun and Jason.
Let's bring in Madea just for the hell of it. Who else went into space? The Space Nuts. Dave Bowman to go into space.
What if the monolith actually contains Madea? It'd be so much resin.
2010, the year we make Madea.
Here's the zombie film people should pitch: is where all the directors whose posthumous films were remade rise from the grave. Kubrick comes out and says, "AI is nothing like I wanted it to be."
Yeah, but Kubrick wouldn't leave England even as a zombie, so he'd be all by himself.
That's a great twist.
Just it's sort of like the end of 28 Days Later. Just stay out of England and you're all right. That's pretty much it.
Oh God, Alan Pakula rises, but
nobody's remade.
No, but he's there's not enough. There's not enough of him. One of my favorite filmmakers, by the way. Like. All things being equal, the guy was fucking great.
He's a terrific filmmaker.
And he's destroyed. Dead. Was he in a car accident?
He got like a pipe through his head or something like that, didn't he?
But he was in a car accident. He wasn't sleeping and a pipe went through his
head. No, like I think he was driving. I could be wrong, but I think he was driving like on the Long Island Expressway or something like that. And there was a truck in front of him that had like pipes, and that they came loose and just wrecked him. Is what I believe happened. I mean, that's the story I remember hearing. I could be making that up.
Was Ali Larter anywhere nearby? And then what, Bob Clark died in a car accident, too.
He was killed by an illegal immigrant in a car accident. Yeah, right here in California.
It's true.
It was a black Christmas that year. It was actually a brown Christmas by Cheech and Chong.
It was a Mexican gentleman?
It was an illegal Mexican immigrant who was drunk, which is so unusual in the... In that community.
Was he taking our jobs from us?
He was taking our Bob Clark killing jobs from us. An American could have killed Bob Clark that night, but instead, an illegal immigrant did.
He did it much faster and cheaper.
Much faster and cheaper, exactly. For half the pay an American would accept for killing the director of A Christmas Story. I like Bob Clark. And you know what is funny is that Death Dream is a picture that I think they've talked about remaking, which would be a terrific movie to remake, I think.
That's the movie. I look at Death Dream as there's two reasons I know Death Dream exists. It was in Tom Savini's Grand Illusions book.
Yep.
And it's the other movie in the Motel Hell 2-disc DVD. I've never watched it.
It's good.
I bought the Motel DVD for Motel Hell, but on the flip side is Death Dream, and the only reason there's any significance because Tom Savini did a chapter.
Death Dream
on
is
it.
Really good. I think it's a movie that could be remade today. I think it could be really interesting. So somebody get on that. I think it's actually it's one of them. I mean, every movie's been optioned to be remade. I think Death Dream is being quote unquote remade. I don't know.
I kind of want to see a looker kind of handled better, because.
I want to see Diary of the Dead remade. That's what I would like to see. With a little more quality.
I want it to remake He's Just Not That Into You.
I mean, well, strangely enough, they're remaking the film Push later on this year as a black movie starring Monique. So they've changed.
It's called Push.
They're still called Push, strangely enough, but I saw it at Sundance. This is the year where there's two films called Push coming out. The most generic thing you could call a movie. And there's two films in the same title.
They should just legally change one to Dante's Peak.
And then that's actually the title of Clerks 3. But
please tell me there's not going to be a Clerks 3.
You know what? I think that Zach and Mary didn't make any money, so I think, yeah, there will be.
Zach and Mary was so not aggressive.
Can I have more of this booze?
Pour it to your heart's content. Yeah, we have to tell the folks what the sponsorships are.
Woodford Reserve Distiller Select from Lebro and Graham.
We have a very nice bourbon called Woodford Reserve and Coca-Cola. Now, I've warned Devin that it's really not a mixing bourbon, but it's so good.
Yeah, but previously in the evening, Devin was ordering well drinks. So he doesn't actually give a shit.
He was ordering Jeffrey Wells drinks.
You know what's so funny? So today, at the Joaquin Phoenix press day, one of the co-stars of the movie who we interviewed today was Vanessa Shaw. Vanessa Shaw is one
with
of
the... With an I, right?
With an I.
Vanessa.
Vanessa.
So you know what her vehicle... Yeah.
So she's one of the co-stars of 310 to Yuma. And if you'll remember, when 310 to Yuma came out, Mr. Jeffrey Wells was embroiled in a controversy because after seeing a press screening of the movie, he emailed director James Mangold saying, "I love your movie, but I love that you had Vanessa Shaw topless, but you only showed her back. Do you happen to have any photographs from the set of her breasts?" And somehow that email made it out into the wild, and Nikki Fink published it. And you know what? Jeff Wells, this man is amazing, because Jeff Wells just walked through that. Like, all of a sudden, the entire internet is like, Jeff Wells is emailing directors asking for nude pictures of his starlets. And Wells was just like, "Yeah, I guess so." And he just walked through it. I mean, like, I got to give the guy a lot of fucking credit. I had my own little brush with infamy last week when that video on Slash Film showed up, and I don't think I would have handled that as well as Wells handled this Vanessa Shaw bit. But when I'm sitting across the fucking table from Vanessa Shaw, all I can think is I want to take pictures of her and send them to Jeff Wells. So that dirty old man.
I'm on a similar note. Whenever I have some communications with Stuart Gordon, and he gets very upset that I keep asking him for candid photos of Billy Warlock eating a sandwich.
Yeah, with a name like Billy Warlock, he's in the wrong line of work, right?
Yeah,
it just seems like
I always thought he should go back to school to start the law firm of William Warlock. Can you imagine he was an ambulance chaser? Can you
imagine he was a doctor? Can you imagine? Dr. Warlock will see you now.
Or create a patent for the perfect thing to keep your footlocker safe, the Warlock.
Oh my god. Good lord. Oh, even for a Chud podcast, that was low.
The good thing is there is no Lord.
Except for Tracy.
Yeah, may she rest in... Speaking of, I want to talk about the benefits of having a movie website. They sent me an R-rated screener of Pirates 2.
They say, really? They did an R-rated cut of Pirates 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got invited to a screening of that.
It's just a bunch of handshakes. I'm about to fuck you. Hi. Then cut.
I got invited to a screening of that, and I didn't go, and somebody I know went to a screening of Pirates 2, and like I guess it was like all the porn stars that were in it were there, and they were all like applauding each other for their cum shots and stuff, which it just feels so strange. It just feels so strange. Oh, I know that my roommate has a copy of Pirates 1. On his DVD player.
You know what? Room. I was this is kind of a confessional. I was so intrigued by that whole concept that I went online. I was like, I want to see clips from this.
Right.
Whoever is in charge of keeping the risque photos or scenes from that movie offline should be in charge of like major Hollywood release.
Because there's
nothing.
Really?
There's nothing. I mean, I don't know how to go into torrents and all that, but in all the places where you could find like.
Right.
Celebrity, you know, like the stuff that's supposed to be, you know, like hard to find.
Right.
No pirate stuff. Huh. So whoever's in charge of that is doing a fancy job.
Which is not the person who's in charge of. I'll tell you, it's so funny. I was at Sundance and there was, and I can't say the name of the script on the podcast, but there's a hot script that's going around town, and somebody I knew had read it and was like, oh, it's amazing, but you'll never be able to read it. And then I came over from Sundance and I got it 2 days later. And this town, there's just no secrecy. There's nothing. There's like... So the porn world has it more together than Hollywood. It was funny. Woody Allen has it more together, too. Try getting a Woody Allen plot line out of for his next movie. It's impossible.
You know what's funny is, like, people make fun of him now, but he's in almost the perfect position. When was the last time one of his films actually turned a profit?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, although Cassandra's Dream was the worst one.
Maybe Sweet and Lowdown. Maybe.
I bet Vicky Cristina Barcelona will turn a profit.
No, that's what I'm saying, though. This one finally seems to restore some of the vigor. But I've always, like, his movies are always worth seeing aside from, like, that Love one with Jason Biggs or whatever it was.
Anything But Love.
Yeah.
That's a terrible picture.
It's a horrible movie.
The thing about Woody Allen I don't get...
Cassandra's Dream's not that horrible. It's not as bad as, like...
It's all right. I have to watch it again. I wasn't that sold on it the first time. Vicky Cristina Barcelona is really good.
Who's the best in it? Is it Penelope or is it Bardem?
I think Bardem is amazing in it. Javier Bardem is amazing in it. The problem with Vicky Cristina Barcelona is that Woody Allen made a movie where there's a three-way with Javier Bardem, Penelope Cruz, and Scarlett Johansson and does not show it to us. This is a tragedy. There's no nudity in that whole picture.
Woody Allen himself does not appear in the film.
No, right? Woody Allen does not appear in the film.
And Javier Bardem is not playing the Woody Allen surrogate.
No, anything but this is a movie that has no Woody Allen surrogate at all. It's sort of a very separate picture. It doesn't follow that sort of path of his recent pictures where, like, Will Ferrell plays Woody Allen or Kenneth Branagh plays Woody Allen. No, it's a totally different thing.
Kenneth Branagh played the fuck out of Woody Allen.
It was really. I mean, like, it's weird. It's distracting to watch because he's doing a Woody Allen, and it's just not right. I mean, like, I think Celebrity would have been a lot better if Branagh had not quite done Woody as so much as if he was on Leno doing impersonations. And that's what it feels like. He's like, I'm fucking on Leno, and now here comes my George Bush. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't know. It's like very Rich Little. And the movie itself is conceptually good, but I feel like Branagh kills it.
Speaking of Rich Little, how's Dinklage doing?
He was on 30 Rock a couple weeks ago. Did you catch him on 30 Rock?
No, I saw him in 15 Rock.
You would love it, because on 30 Rock, the storyline...
Isn't he a love interest?
He was a love interest, but it was one episode. The concept is that Tina Fey's character goes baby crazy, and she can't stop, like, adoring babies and children on the street. And she sees him on the street from behind and thinks he's a little boy and ruffles his hair and is like, aren't you adorable? And then he's like, what? And so she has to pretend like she didn't think he was a child and then starts dating him. It's really incredibly funny. It was so good. That show is amazing.
Still.
It's still amazing.
Because I know they got Cameo happy.
They got Cameo happy. The cameos still work, though.
Granted, their first couple albums were good.
The last couple episodes, I think, have been really fucking terrific. I really think the show is sort of... I think season two was his creative peak, but I think right now it's going particularly well.
Here's why I can't enjoy it. It's $2.99 an episode on iTunes.
But don't they send you the DVDs to review? Really?
No.
That's a try. Universal Home Video. What? Send Nick Nunziata copies of 30 Rock. This is ridiculous. And then Warner Brothers Home Video, send me Supernatural. So I heard that's worth watching, but I won't pay for it.
Well, we get them. I just send them to Dave Oliver.
No, that's fair enough. I will never review them.
Yeah.
I just want to see them. I will never write about them. I mean, maybe I'll write about them in the larger sense, but I won't write about them.
You know, the scary thing is people tell me that people that like X-Files and Buffy are going to like Supernatural.
Well, the thing is, like, Supernatural, I watched the first couple episodes. I watched them on Xbox. I downloaded them, and I was like, well, this is like Buffy if Buffy was a show about gay people. And
it's not.
But they're not gay people, I guess, it turns out. You'd think that they're in love, but they're brothers. But everybody tells me it's one of these shows you got to watch, like, the first 15, and then it gets better. But Ryan Rotten is, like, a converted lover of the show.
The other guy that's not Jared Padalecki
was in My Bloody Valentine.
Right, and apparently he's like, I read your interview with him, and he seemed like a really kind of fun, charismatic guy.
He's a cool dude. I liked him. I thought he was good. I thought he was good in My Bloody Valentine.
It was a video interview, wasn't it?
It was. You did not read it. You probably
watched the shit.
Unless you were deaf, in which case we closed captioned it for your enjoyment. But yeah, he's all right. I mean, like, whatever. All these dudes, the actors are useless to interview, but. He's good in My Bloody Valentine. I like that movie. I got some shit on the boards also for liking that movie. But I thought that was a pretty fucking good movie. especially the 3D. I thought was terrific. You I'm assuming caught this.
I haven't seen it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I liked it.
Actually, I was supposed to see it with Mr. Steve Murphy, and he pushed out or something, and then he saw it by himself and he hated it. So I said, all right, I'll skip this one.
It's hard for me to imagine somebody really hating that movie. It's sort of weird because, I mean, I don't know, the 3D works. It's got Tom Atkins in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it a big part?
A fairly, you know, prominent part. I mean, and, well, which means penis. And, you know, I for me, it really worked. I know I'm easy when it comes to horror films, but it's got good kills. It's got really good kills, and it's in 3D, and it's fun. And it actually has a mystery at the center that isn't quite Agatha Christie level, but you may actually find yourself...
It's a Julie Christie level?
It's more like Julie from the Love Boat level, but very close. She is your activities director, so...
She always had, like, her bras were too tight or something. She didn't really have much to show. So I think it was a failed exercise in trying to turn her into a sex.
How did they never do The Love Boat as a movie? How is that possible? This hasn't happened. Why is it Will Ferrell not playing Captain Steubing? Isn't that just obvious? Isn't that an obvious thing in this day and age?
He wouldn't play Captain Steubing. He would play Isaac.
You think Paul Rudd would play Isaac, I feel like. Or maybe you get...
They would get Alan Arkin to play Captain
You get Steubing. Romany Malco to play Isaac. Paul Rudd plays Gopher. I really think that Will Ferrell will play Captain Steubing. I think so. And then he would sink the ship.
See, those movies always get like a really good character actor to play like one role, like the role, like the kind of like the paternal role.
Well, the Death of Doctor.
No, the Captain Steubing's the, like, you get Ian Holm or something, or you get...
See, but I think the joke the is doctor, that the captain is the most ridiculous one out of all of them, and then the paternal role is somebody else in the ship who is disgusted by the captain the whole time. That'd be the joke I would
No, okay, wait, who's... No, there's somebody that's the obvious Will Ferrell role in that. It's not the doctor, because the doctor's going to be...
I mean, I guess it'd be
the doctor's going to be played by Jeff Goldblum. The Isaac's going to be either played by a white guy, because that's the fun...
That's the
fun,
joke, right?
Yeah, or they go, like Eddie Griffin, honestly.
Well, I think Romany Malco, the black guy from 40-Year-Old Virgin.
That's his name?
Romany Malco, yeah.
That's a fuck name.
It is. And Romany is the gypsy people.
Because I wonder if he ever gets Roma Mafia's fan mail by mistake. That guy's fuck. He's not the one who's a murderer, though. That's the other guy. The criminal.
Oh, you know who I would get for that? I would get Craig Robinson.
See, too obvious.
He's so
I'm actually working on a story about that kind of shit. There's an animated feature coming out.
I saw that in the back end of Chud.com.
There's an animated feature coming out that's basically the exact nerd fanboy casting of an animated feature.
Is this Nine?
It's something else.
Okay.
But it's basically everyone you would expect. It's basically all the players from like two different comedic factions lumped together. But okay, who
Craig Robinson is pretty amazing though, and he got busted with like meth, ecstasy, acid, weed, and coke in his car.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's impressive.
But he got off because he said those were just features.
He did some really good improv and they let him go.
Craig Robinson. I mean, how do you can't arrest him.
No, he's the nicest fucking dude too. Nice dude. I mean, for a black guy.
Well, you don't even need to preface. I mean, that goes without saying. But okay, so I don't remember. There was a younger Gopher was like the kind of the nebbish, the kind of like nerdy kind of
right.
Isaac was the suave
bartender. The suave bartender.
Gavin
the
McCoy,
Doc who was fucked everybody.
Doc was awesome. He's my favorite character. I still think that's Jeff Goldblum's character. I mean, Life Aquatic was kind of the Love Boat.
And then
Captain Steubing. But there wasn't there like a generic like action hero kind of lead.
I don't know if there was. I don't remember there being.
There was Julie. One. I bet you Fred Grandy would pull an Adam West and demand to be involved.
Yeah,
I'm still healthy enough to play Gopher.
He'd probably pass a law.
Yeah,
shit. that he would have to play Gopher.
He'd probably pass a law, but that's only because his diet. He's a Jude Lawitarian.
Oh Lord!
Once again,
Tracy Lords.
So how about this?
We could have been at porn star karaoke tonight?
Yeah,
we opted to entertain you.
What
folks.
We decided to do was go grab a bite and then go to a bar, and then we were waiting desperately for Mick Garris to walk in. We were doing like a weird...
We had a table full of conditioner.
And I don't. And, let's see what the readers think of our TMZ idea. We're thinking about having Chud become like a gossip site where we kind of lurked around and waited for the real stars in the film business to show up, like the Mick Garris's or the Lance Henriksen like stunt double. Or like
seeing a Jamba Juice cane hotter.
I was at Starbucks and Carl Lumley was six people behind me.
He's been dead for a long time, so he was really behind you.
Carl Lumley? That's Mantis.
Oh, I'm thinking of
John Wayne?
No, Carl Lumley, the old time movie producer who the Lumley Theater is named after.
Okay. Because a lot of people confuse John Wayne with Carl Lumley.
That's obvious. Duh. But.
Because a lot of people think that John Wayne's real name was Marion.
Or Lemmel. Carl Lemmel is what I was thinking.
But his real Lemmel. Name wasn't Marion. It was Mantis. with periods. So a female Mantis.
Well, once she became a woman, yes.
And she ate the head of
Womantis, John Wayne. Yes.
Yeah. Nice. Fucking the most obscure reference. So what do you guys think? Should we be a site that focuses on the day-to-day goings-on of Michael Gross? Going as far as to have paparazzi waiting outside his apartment in Reseda. Who else is out there that we really need to keep the pulse?
Every single night, Clu Gulager is at the New Beverly Theater, so I could definitely get shots of him because he goes every night. And even when they're playing the same movie two nights in a row, he goes every night anyway.
Really?
Yeah, he really does. Yeah, and Clu Gulager is gonna die at the New Beverly. And I've asked him, I said, do you have, like, a Clu Gulager has died in the theater? And, by the way, Clu comes in the theater, sits in the front row, and then passes out right at the beginning of the movie. And then it's always like, is Clu dead? Like, for, like, the whole movie, and then he gets up. It's kind of amazing.
Does it bother Mr. Gulager that he's the second most popular Clu Gulager behind Amos Gulager, who plays Clu every night?
He's, I think his son John is actually probably better known to our audience these days.
Not really. I mean, like, because Feast was a blast. Feast 2.
I didn't see Feast 2.
Was not.
They're trying to get me to do interviews for Feast 3.
What's the premise of Feast 3?
It's like another movie in the series.
Is Honey...
I think that's the whole premise. It's another movie in the series. That's
it. That was the pitch?
That was the pitch.
I think that's what happens with Saw.
Let's,
hey,
let's just do a third one.
We live in a world where Tobin
Oh,
Bell...
I'm gonna steal a line from somebody, a message board poster, Sean Bateman, who has noticed that... Jigsaw is the worst, dumbest guy in movie history. Because if you've seen any of the Saw films, you know that his whole thing is like, he puts you in death traps so that you can appreciate life.
Okay.
But everybody dies. He fails again and again and again. How can you appreciate life when the jaws of a bear trap are crushing your head? Somebody has to survive one of these traps in order for his whole plan to work. His whole plan's retarded. It's really...
Well, in which one are we up to?
Is this We're up to Saw 5.
So Saw 6 is going to turn out that Jigsaw saw the blob, thought Shawnee Smith was hot. So let's start a film franchise to keep her alive.
Is she out of it? I haven't seen any of them past 2.
I think she is out officially now.
They filmed 6, I think, already. It's the whole thing, and they're going to do one in 3D now.
Of course they are.
Man.
So. And then 7 is in space.
I wish. Oh, God, I wish. I might actually have to go back and become a Saw fan if they go into space. That might actually change the whole thing for me. I hate those movies. I hate them.
I saw the first one. It was a nightmare. And I never saw another one. But it's I cannot believe how many regular Joes who know what I do kind of for a job come up to me, and that's what they want to talk about.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, What drives me crazy about Saw isn't even that the regular Joes are into it, because whatever. It's that the other studios don't want to put anything up against Saw, so Saw owns Halloween by default. And, I mean, Mike Daugherty, one of the writers on Superman Returns and the X-Men films, wrote and directed really an amazing Halloween
Trick or
movie. Trick or Treat. It's an amazing movie. And Warner Brothers, I mean, whether all their other problems aside... with the movie, I'm not sure what they all are, but I think one of them is that they're afraid of putting a movie up against Saw, and I think that the time has come to kill Saw, and somebody's got to step up and put a horror fucking movie up against Saw. I mean, Trick or Treat would be the perfect one. It's a great movie, and it is like a Chud movie through and through.
Really?
100%.
Sammy Kerr does not feature.
No, but it's like, the thing I keep saying is, it's like, it's imagine an Amblin movie that was rated R. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, if all those kids on Halloween in E.T. ran into real monsters, that's what Trick or Treat is. So it's yeah. it's what, really
is it an R-rated
cool.
movie.
It is very R-rated. Yeah.
Is there anybody in it?
What's his name? I'm now too many bourbons in to. Yeah, there's a number of people in it. Fuck. What's his name? Dr. Kirk Connors and from Happiness.
Oh, Dylan Walsh.
Dylan Walsh is one of the. I mean, there's a number of other people as well. Dylan Walsh has probably the best segment. it's sort of an anthology story that all winds in together. It's so fucking good. I mean, it bums me out that.
Well, you've been talking about it a while. A lot of people have been talking about it. And if I remember right, posters surfaced for it 2 years ago.
It was supposed to come out two Halloweens ago, yeah. It was supposed to come out.
Was it a Comic-Con screening? Or
it didn't show at Comic-Con. It came to Comic-Con. They had stuff at Comic-Con. There's like a, you can go to Amazon right now and buy the book of the movie. You can go buy masks of the main character, the kid. I mean, they have all this merchandising, but the movie is just this vapor movie. And it's a movie that's so much fun. That is the kind of movie I honestly believe, if it came out, I believe it's the best Halloween movie ever made.
The best Halloween movie?
Period. And yeah. Halloween, like, the Halloween films are great, whatever, but I feel like you could take Halloween 1, and it could be July 4th or whatever. This is a movie about Halloween. It's about pumpkin carving. It's about trick-or-treating. It's about masks. It's literally about those things. And so it is sort of like the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown of real horror movies. It's fucking amazing.
Why is it that all the movies that get held up by the studios have at least some redeeming characteristic that makes them so worth seeing?
It's crazy. The ones that get, I mean, like, a good example of a movie that got fucked by the studio is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and it's the movies that are interesting, unique, different, and can't be easily marketed the way that other popular movies of the time are marketed. Those are the ones that get fucked. I mean, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, we all know, is a classic. It's a great fucking movie, but you can't sell it in the current modern paradigm. Trick or Treat is a great fucking movie, but you can't sell it like Saw, because Trick or Treat is very much a modern day take on an 80s kind of a horror movie. And so they don't know how to sell it. It's harder. They have to work to sell it, and they don't bother doing it. And by the way, I'm just getting over a flu, so my voice is not that great, so I'm sorry that it's cracking like I'm just hitting puberty like Bobby Brady. But I have the Sundance flu. I'm at the tail end of it.
Well, I mean, if you look at the track record, I mean, like, Below was a good movie that mm-hmm. kind of got shafted. Equilibrium, a Chud favorite. Not your favorite, but a Chud favorite.
Chud favorite. And a film that's a unique picture.
Yeah, it's a unique picture.
Whether or not you like it, it's a movie doing something different.
But if you think about, like, if you go through kind of the anal, like, Titanic was one of those movies.
Right.
I mean, and that worked out.
The movies, I mean, I think that, you know, if Warner Brothers wanted to put the marketing muscle behind it, I think that they could make a lot of fucking money on Trick or Treat.
Well, I don't have the stuff in front of me, but what are the last five movies that studios put out? I'm sure they've put out something in 2009 already.
Tonight they screened He's Just Not That Into You. You know, I'm trying to think what else they put out this year. I'm not 100% sure. I mean, their next picture is Watchmen, obviously. So yeah.
That's their next picture between...
I think it's their very next picture. I'm trying to think.
Well, that's a hard sell, too. I mean, like...
Yeah, it's a tough sell.
Watchmen's the kind of movie that, you know, I mean, it's going to require grace, serious grace for that to... You know, I'm still not convinced it's going to be a hit.
I am less and less convinced as the days go by it's going to be a hit. And that's too bad. I think for the people involved, at the end of the day, the fact that it got made right, I think is going to be the... For some movies, the life of a movie is a sprint. For some movies, it's about opening weekend. For some movies, it's about the heritage. I think Watchmen is going to probably be the kind of movie that...
The only thing I think that might help is if they sell it as the Dark Knight of this year. Because Dark Knight's a long-ass movie.
Right.
It's challenging in a lot of respects in terms of the subject matter. It's not 100% successful, not even close. But it's legit.
Well, I'm curious. You talk to more... I don't talk to any regular people. I live in Los Angeles and nobody regular here. I mean, what do regular people say?
Regular people overvalue that movie.
Watchmen.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Dark Knight.
But what do they say about Watchmen? What are they saying?
Actually,
anything?
The thing about the Watchmen is that what I've discovered in talking to regular people is that they're aware of it. They're either baffled by it or they are closeted fans of that graphic right. novel. Because if you think about it this way, the people that are now... have kids who are like in positions of power in the corporate world, they were the right age to experience right. Watchmen when it came
and
out.
And that sold a lot of fucking copies. Hell yeah. A lot of people have that
copy. Yeah, Watchmen. So the thing is, it's weird because, like, and there's, I have an experience recently where there's a guy who I hang out with at the cigar shop who I would have never, ever thought. He's a salesman. He works for Microsoft. He's a Southern guy. He's a hunter. He's a total, right. like, salt of the earth kind of guy. And we just accidentally had a discussion, and he brought the Watchmen up, and he knew that thing way better than I did.
Wow.
He knew it backwards and forwards. He hasn't picked up a comic book since.
Right.
But he read The Watchmen when he was in high school. So
did he know it was just called Watchmen, not The Watchmen?
Well, I'm saying it. Yes. I also shop at The Kroger.
Do you listen to the rock and roll?
I did catch the AIDS. But I got all but one aid removed. But he knew the subtext. He didn't just read it. He knew exactly what it was, and he was very, you know, affected by it.
Right.
Because, you know, that's a really good way to kind of ingest media, you know, literature without yeah. having to read a book.
Yeah.
And I, as a result, now he's reading. I handed him all my trades of like Preacher and just various things. He's like, because if you know,
Youngblood,
catching
actually the real hardcore stuff.
Basically, everything that opened up with Image. Bloodstrike, Supreme, didn't open, but fucking Youngblood.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the other thing is that
he kept waiting for the hockey. He's like, where's Swayze?
You know, they were making Slapshot.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like greenlit and going forward. But the other thing about Watchmen that's interesting is that it's opening, I think, on its own weekend, more or less. And so that, I think that really helps the movie too. I think that January shows us that people will go to the movies to see movies regardless of what the fuck they are. January is a movie month. You can open anything in January right now. Fucking Paul Blart. You open Paul Blart in July, forget it. You open Paul Blart in January.
Okay, Zodiac opened in January.
It didn't get the proper support from the studio. Paramount hated Zodiac. I had Paramount PR people tell me they hated Zodiac. I mean, the studio did not like the movie.
I think it's they hate David Fincher. Until now.
They still,
now he's going to be everybody's favorite person.
They still hate him. He's a dick. They still hate him. They're not big fans. But no, they really hated that movie. They didn't get that movie. They held that movie till January, which was like a passive-aggressive way of fucking its Oscar chances. The movie's done. It was done and ready to be released in November. But, you know, it was a studio decision, so that was why Zodiac shit the bed. But I call it the white noise principle, which is a movie can be really terrible and can feature Michael Keaton getting suplexed by a ghost and make a lot of money in January. So, I mean, a fucking Michael Keaton movie is number one in January because it's January. That's why.
Well, that's why I want more of that. I also want I think there should be a law. Whenever Michael Keaton makes a movie, they need to do a sequel with
Nathan Fillion?
Yeah, exactly.
or Val Kilmer.
Jack Froster. You know, like... Beetle Juicier. I mean, like, they should just do that. That should be Nathan Fillion's lot in life.
Oh, I have such a good Nathan Fillion story, but I can't tell it on the podcast.
Damn it.
It's so good.
You know he's dating Brittany Murphy?
Is he?
Yeah.
God bless him.
She's going to legally change her name to Fillion Murphy. That's the end of this podcast.
Oh my goodness.